This is Regionally Speaking. Good morning, I'm Tom Maloney. Juneteenth, short for June 19th, is the day's blending of the words June and 19th, and it commemorates the June 19th, 1865 anniversary, the day that Union Army Major General Gordon Granger rode into Galveston, Texas, and told slaves of Abraham Lincoln's emancipation. That day came more than 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st of 1863. We'll get into the discussion this hour. What does Juneteenth mean to Northwest Indiana? What does it mean to you? We'll learn about the history as well as the impact of the now federal holiday.
Whereas, on the 22nd day of September A.D., 1862, a proclamation was issued by the President of the United States containing, among other things, the following, to wit:
that on the first day of January, A.D. 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state or designated part of a state.
That the executive will, on the first day of January, aforesaid, by proclamation, designate the states and parts of states, if any, in which the people thereof, respectively, shall then be in rebellion against the United States, and the fact that any state or the people thereof shall on that day be in good faith represented in the Congress of the United States by members chosen thereto at elections wherein a majority of the qualified voters of such states shall have participated, in the absence of strong countervailing testimony, be deemed conclusive evidence that such states and the people thereof are not then in rebellion against the United States.
Now therefore I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, by virtue of the power vested in me as Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States in time of actual armed rebellion against the authority and government of the United States, and as a fit and necessary war measure for suppressing said rebellion, do this on this first day of January, A.D. 1863, and in accordance with my purpose so to do, publicly proclaim for the full period of 100 days from the first day above mentioned, order and designate as the states and parts of states wherein the people thereof respectively are this day in rebellion against the United States, the following, to wit:
Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, except the parishes of St. Bernard, Plaquemines, Jefferson, St. John, St. Charles, St. James, Ascension, Assumption, Terrebonne, Lafourche, St. Mary, St. Martin, and Orleans, including the city of New Orleans, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia, except the 48 counties designated as West Virginia, and also the counties of Berkeley, Accomack, Northampton, Elizabeth City, York, Princess Anne, and Norfolk, including the cities of Norfolk and Portsmouth, and which accepted parts are for the present left precisely as if this proclamation were not issued.
And by virtue of the power, and for the purpose aforesaid, I do order and declare that all persons held as slaves within said designated states and parts of states are and henceforward shall be free, and that the executive government of the United States, including the military and naval authorities thereof, will recognize and maintain the freedom of said persons.
And I hereby enjoin upon the people so declared to be free to abstain from all violence unless in necessary self-defense, and I recommend to them that in all cases, when allowed, they labor faithfully for reasonable wages.
And I further declare and make known that such persons of suitable condition will be received into the armed service of the United States to garrison forts, positions, states, and other places, and to man vessels of all sorts in said service.
And upon this act, sincerely believed to be an act of justice warranted by the Constitution upon military necessity, I invoke the considerate judgment of mankind and the gracious favor of Almighty God.
That was the Emancipation Proclamation, as recorded by myself, Tom Maloney, Michael Gallenberger, and of course, Dee Dotson here on Regionally Speaking. Juneteenth, short for June 19th, the day's name's blending of the words June and 19th. On June 19th of 1865, Union Army Major General Gordon Granger rode into Galveston, Texas, and he told slaves of their emancipation. That day came more than 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st of 1863. And on June 17th of 2021, President Joe Biden made it a federal holiday to be celebrated across the country. Welcome to Regionally Speaking. I'm Tom Maloney. She's Dee Dotson, and we're joined by a litany of guests today. Gary Chapter Communications Chair Mary Cossey, NAACP Hammond Chapter Reverend Homer Clay Cobb, who's also the president, and Purdue University Northwest Professor of Political Science and Interim Associate of Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs. That title's a mouthful, Megan Rinkner, as well as Purdue University Northwest Assistant Dean of Students, Britt Hudson. Welcome, all of you, to Regionally Speaking.
Oh, thank you for having us.
There we
thank
go.
Thank you for the invite.
We appear to have a little bit of a delay, so we will work through that delay here on this show today. And this conversation was originally spurred on by you, Dee, in terms of wanting to learn more about Juneteenth. And up here in the Union, in the northern part of the country, as we fought for the Blues versus the Grays, it was not necessarily as popular as it was, especially in Texas at the time. In the late 1860s, going all the way into the 1900s, Juneteenth was really celebrated across the state. Tens of thousands of formerly enslaved people, along with families who were born out of slavery, would attend parties, would attend celebrations and jubilees during that time to celebrate Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. And, of course, it is Union Army Major General Gordon Granger riding into Galveston, Texas, and something that I didn't realize, Dee, was the reason why it happened in 1865. Texas is a big state, and we know how hard it is to even drive across Texas now, let alone ride across Texas with Union troops freeing every slave from every part of the state.
Absolutely. And Tom, if you don't mind, if I can just chime in for 1 second and just share this as well. Another selfish reason that I did want to have this conversation is that I was speaking to a friend who is non-African-American 2 years ago, and I was discussing, and this was before Juneteenth, which we will get into later, became a federal holiday, and I was discussing with my friend plans for Juneteenth, and my friend, who was non-African-American, asked me, what is Juneteenth? And in my very basic and very elementary way, tried to explain what Juneteenth was, but me as an African-American, I assumed that everyone knew what Juneteenth was. And so I looked at this as an opportunity to not only continue to educate myself on Juneteenth, but hopefully to educate our listening audience on what exactly Juneteenth is. So that is just being fully transparent and being fully honest. That is the reason that I did want us to have this conversation with so many voices within our community.
So let's get to some of those voices right now. We've got Mary Cossey, the communications chair of the NAACP Gary Chapter, joining us. Mary, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us.
So my question, outside of the brief history lesson that feels more like a paragraph in a history book I might have gotten in a high school social studies class, what is Juneteenth, and what does it mean for you? What does it mean for the NAACP?
Well, I'll start by saying Juneteenth is really important, and I would concur with Dee in that a lot of people are not educated in terms of what it is. And prior to coming onto the show, I did a poll of some school principals just to ask if Juneteenth was taught within the school district. And it's It isn't a few, but the majority of my colleagues or friends that I asked that are administrators said that it's not. So what I would say is my definition of what Juneteenth is really the freeing of slaves. While Emancipation Proclamation was declared and the Civil War ended, the information did not funnel down to everyone who had been enslaved. And I think that people need to understand that. I think from a perspective of where we are today, there needs to be more education. Yes, there should be celebration, but in addition to that, we need to look at what the symbolism of Juneteenth is and begin to, like NAACP's or universities or just basic school districts, provide education and take a look at that and say, well, how far have we gotten? Where do we need to go in terms of the celebration, not just the coming together of a, you know, get together and, but talk about what are some systemic ongoing issues in our communities that quote unquote keep us enslaved.
And we'll be getting into some of those systemic issues later on in the conversation today on Regionally Speaking. Meg Rinker, I believe you've actually got the longest title that I've ever had on Regionally Speaking before. PhD, Professor of Political Science and Interim Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at Purdue University Northwest. Welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So
I know it's a long title.
Yeah. Well, I'll call you Professor Meg if that works.
That's great.
My question for you, with regards to what were the political implications of the Emancipation Proclamation, as well as the ensuing march through Texas? Major General Granger was essentially awarded Texas post-Civil War to go ahead and look after for the now rejoined Union. That's why it took so long. It took almost 2 years, a year and a half after the official Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, almost 2 years later for him, excuse me, 2.5 years later for Major General Granger to ride through Texas, free those individuals. What was that post-Juneteenth, that post-Emancipation Proclamation, what kind of an impact did it have when it comes to the political landscape at the time?
Absolutely. So just as you're saying, right, President Lincoln had to kind of, it's this process of bringing about democracy that's very arduous, right? He had to declare his intent, right, that he was going to issue the Emancipation Proclamation the September before, right? Then he issues the actual Emancipation Proclamation that's dealing with slaves in the Confederate rebellion areas. Right. But then there's those contested, you know, slaveholding states that were still part of the Union. Slave status right there is not going to be fully decided even till the passage of the 13th Amendment, right, and the formal constitutional ending of slavery. So I think what we see through this important holiday of Juneteenth is how freedom is this arduous process, right? And you have to kind of declare your intentions that you're going to do it and that you're going to do it against kind of all opposition. Of course, we had to wait till General Major Gordon Granger could really enforce the Emancipation Proclamation in the furthest reaches of the Confederacy, which was Texas, the big old state. And then it's still a project. Freedom is still a project at work within the U.S., and there's still so much area for progress. But we nevertheless celebrate the enormous courage and the emancipation that happened, that was announced in Texas, even though it would have to be undergirded with constitutional amendments, and it would have to be undergirded by major activism of organizations like the NAACP, Dr. King, and so on.
Juneteenth is also known as the Juneteenth National Independence Day, Jubilee Day, Emancipation Day in Texas, Freedom Day, as well as Black Independence Day, first celebrated on June 19th of 1866, a year after Major General Granger informed the enslaved persons of Texas that they were, in fact, free. And, of course, On June 19th, it officially became a federal holiday, with President Biden signing it into a decree on June 17th of 2021. But I wonder this, and I guess I didn't realize this until we were doing research for the program. We have just about a minute here before the break, that Juneteenth actually came before the 13th Amendment, in that the there were still two states. It was Kentucky and it was Delaware, I believe, that were still allowed, which were both Union states, I should note, that were still allowed to have enslaved persons. And then there's an Indian tribe that also had enslaved persons that actually didn't get freed until 1866. But the 13th Amendment is really what freed all enslaved persons across the country from every state. And just in the minute that we have, Professor Meg, so why do we celebrate, I guess, Juneteenth versus the official anniversary of the 13th Amendment?
That's such an excellent question. I mean, I think it kind of gets to the political nature of decision-making, right? Lincoln needed those states. He needed Kentucky and Delaware's votes in the U.S. Congress in order to, you know, promulgate the action of the Civil War, in order to advance the ultimate, you know, in order to win the ultimate war, he needed to, you know, make compromises within certain battles. And one of those compromises was keeping Kentucky and Delaware on board. But he knew, he foresaw that we would have to ultimately pass the 13th as well as the 14th and 15th Amendments in order to really have those constitutional durable protections for Blacks and for really all people.
That is Professor Meg Rinker, PhD, Professor of Political Science and Interim Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs. We'll be getting into more of the discussion coming up as we take a look at Juneteenth over the years, coming up right after the break here on Regionally Speaking. Sam Cooke with Change Gonna Come. And before that was Freedom by Beyonce. You're listening to Regionally Speaking. I'm Tom Maloney. She's Dee Dotson. And we've got a long list of wonderful guests as we talk about Juneteenth here on Regionally Speaking, talking about the history of Juneteenth and transitioning now, I guess, sort of into the the revival of it. And before we get into that revival discussion, it was during the second Great Migration, in which thousands and millions of individuals, formerly enslaved people, families, sons and daughters and relatives of formerly enslaved people, left the South, and they moved out across the country. And in moving across the country, they took what was their traditional Southern Jubilee Day, their Juneteenth celebrations, and they brought them to places that hadn't seen them before, whether it was Seattle, whether it was Oakland, whether it was Detroit or Chicago, New York, all of these northern cities seeing a massive influx. And so we transition now into that discussion of Juneteenth today and just, you know, the important role that it plays for many Black Americans across the country, touching base with their history and touching base with a celebration of freedom. And of course, we talked about that at the very beginning with Mary Cossey, Communications Chair, the NAACP Gary chapter, about how hard it is for individuals to still work towards freedoms. And we bring on the conversation now Reverend Homer Clay Cobb, President of the NAACP Hammond chapter. Reverend Cobb, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for inviting me. And, you know, I thank you for your subject and the agenda that's set before us. But Juneteenth came into or brought us in to a point of awareness, because we came into a point of awareness that we realized that in the Negro Act of the 17 that was enacted in 1740, it was still technically in force until 1865. And the Negro Act kept us in a point to where there was not any gain or any wealth that could be made during that time, because it was a restricted wealth and restricted to our confinement to where we were. We look at the economic portion of it, or the economic portion of Reconstruction, that in that portion of it, it changed, because now the labor had to be paid for, and it also had to be or brought into a point that now we could make wealth for ourselves and not wealth for those who were over us. And so it opened up a new era. And so when we come into this time and this time and age, we are awakened to it again for all of those that did not pay attention to it, because they were wondering, why should it be a national holiday? And most people never even heard of Juneteenth. And so as we come into this time and this day and age, we find that it's an awakening period for all of those that were not aware of it. And so we can appreciate it, you know, being a national holiday, because if education doesn't bring about the knowledge of it, at least curiosity should.
That is Reverend Homer Clay Cobb, president of the NAACP Hammond chapter, joining us here on Regionally Speaking. The Negro Act of 1740, and I quote, "The Comprehensive Negro Act of 1740 passed in South Carolina made it illegal for slaves to move abroad, assemble in groups, raise food, earn money, and learn to write English, though reading was not prohibited. Additionally, owners were permitted to kill rebellious slaves if necessary." So that in and of itself as an act really made any sort of livelihood or functioning for freed persons virtually impossible if it were to be enforced, and really goes to show you just the great lengths that that many wealthy, white, rich landowners and slaveholders went through in terms of putting laws on the books to ensure that the persons that they viewed as property would continue to remain property and only create, as you said, Reverend Cobb, wealth for themselves. And so as we learn about this awakening process, we learn about Juneteenth all over the country. I want to bring in Britt Hudson, Assistant Dean of Students at Purdue University Northwest. Britt, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And I have to ask, you're hand in hand, like Professor Meg, Richner at Purdue. What have you seen from students across the Purdue landscape in terms of Juneteenth, particularly African-American students? Is it something they're familiar with? Is it something that they look at and say, that's just what grandma and grandpa did years ago? You know, what is it like now bringing youth into the, as Reverend Cobb puts it, the awakening?
Yeah, they are very engaged and very involved in that process. It's been magical to see, because when I was in college, we didn't celebrate Juneteenth as much. I mean, we hadn't been kind of culturally accepted as it is now, or commercialized, I guess I would say, in a way, as it has become. So the vast difference between when I was in college and the way our students now are celebrating Juneteenth is exceptional. They have lived a life of having access to a lot of information. So they've been a little bit more aware and awakened. And in this process, as they're still figuring out who they are and exploring that while they're in college, they have taken that, more specifically, I'm speaking about our Black students. They've taken that opportunity to be in college and learn and grow and also be able to educate their peers as well when they feel comfortable. So that's been amazing. And of course, we've been in a pandemic for the past 2 years, so things have looked a little different as far as Juneteenth celebration has gone on campus. But this upcoming year, our students are very heavily involved in the planning of our event. So it's not just like I'm going to just show up and just participate and have fun, but they're very integral in crafting what that experience is going to be like for our community.
Absolutely. No, we are in this segment. We're taking a look at Juneteenth over the years. And in preparing for this conversation, both myself as well as Tom did a lot of research so that we made certain that we got the story correct. And one of the things I learned is that down through the years, once again, that the Juneteenth celebration was revived during the Civil Rights Movement. And I learned that the Poor People's March was actually planned by Dr. Martin Luther King to coincide with Juneteenth. What do you guys think of that?
I'm sorry, Dee. I couldn't hear all of your questions. It was kind of going in and out. But I think, from what I could gather from those pieces, about just kind of the reviving of Juneteenth.
Yes.
Was that what the...
Yes, yes. So my question was, you know, it was revived, and during our research, we learned that the reviving of Juneteenth, the celebration and acknowledgement, at least within the African-American community, happened during the Civil Rights Movement, and Dr. King actually planned the Poor People's March to coincide with June 19th, and so I just wanted to get anyone on the call your thoughts on that.
I would say for me, it definitely makes a lot of sense. And I think that also attributes to my own personal knowledge of Juneteenth and how it came to be, and understanding that I grew up in a very pro-Black, very well-educated home. So my parents were very avid about explaining to us what Juneteenth was. And that probably came from their parents kind of, you know, understanding what Juneteenth experiences were. And I think that the most recent resurgence of Juneteenth, kind of commercialization of Juneteenth, kind of happened in our most recent, I would say, form of a civil rights movement. After the killing of George Floyd, I feel like that's when the Juneteenth celebrations kind of revived yet again, especially more in the northern states. Because I have known of Juneteenth celebrations happening a lot in the South. I have a very Southern fancy. So I was able to kind of understand that. But I think, you know, as Black people experience a variety of different trials and tribulations, one thing that I will always say about the community is that regardless of any strife, we're going to have a good time, and we're going to be able to celebrate in spite of all of the things that we have been through. So I think that's, you know, very exciting that we're able to still, after all of that, have an opportunity to get together and rejoice and enjoy the luxuries of the freedom that we've had the privilege of having by all of our ancestors before us.
I would agree with Britt. I would say that unfortunately, my knowledge of Juneteenth did not begin until I went to college. I went to University of Houston in Houston, Texas. And that was when I first became educated on it, because, of course, in the state of Texas, it was very popular. It had been publicized and discussed, and events had been planned. So that was my initial knowledge of it. And it's unfortunate that I have to admit to that, but that is the reality. And I think that as things progress, not just the celebration, but we also have to and must include the education of it.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, and I thank you and appreciate your honesty, because there was many of us that grew up never paying much attention to it. And even though others did celebrate it, it was a matter of everyone else getting on board and realizing the importance of it and what it brought an end to and what it brought a beginning of. And, you know, and that was not really realized or said very much, you know, in my household or community. But I'm grateful that it is now. It's better now. And that we, with the knowledge that we have, are able to not fast forward, but dwell in the forwarding of it.
I agree with you, Pastor.
Absolutely. And we're going to take a break in just about a minute or so. But I wanted to make certain that we gave honor and credit where credit was due. And so I wanted to play a clip of Miss Opal Lee, who is considered the grandmother of Juneteenth, describing her efforts to make Juneteenth a national holiday. Hang on, guys.
We have National Juneteenth Observance Foundation. And so Juneteenth's all over the country a part of this group. It was started by Dr. Myers, Ronald Myers. Do you know he was a medical doctor? Mm. He was a Baptist minister and a jazz musician, wow. All rolled into one.
Wow.
Hard worker, and he's responsible for 45, 46 of the 48 or 9 states that celebrate Juneteenth. Wow. He's responsible for starting those festivals. And so Doc, as we called him, his life's mission was having Juneteenth made a national holiday.
Wow. Coming up, we'll hear more about Miss Opal's dream finally being realized June 17th, 2021. We'll hear about all about Miss Opal Lee, as well as the signing of the national holiday. Stay with us.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
Audra Day with Rise Up, and before that it was John Legend with Glory here on Regionally Speaking. We're discussing Juneteenth, a now federal holiday, as signed into the books officially on June 17th of 2021 by President Joe Biden. And we heard from the grandmother of Juneteenth, Miss Opal Lee, who had wanted to hike across the country 1,400 miles from her home in Fort Worth to Washington, D.C. in 2016, hoping to ask then-President Barack Obama to make Juneteenth a national holiday. But nonetheless, it has officially become a national holiday just a year ago. And today we're learning about Juneteenth, the history of the holiday, as well as the future of the holiday, as more individuals now have begun to learn about the Juneteenth celebration. Of course, if you're just joining us, Juneteenth commemorates the June 19th, 1865 anniversary, which is the day that Union Army Major General Gordon Granger rode into Galveston, Texas, and told slaves of their emancipation. More than 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st of 1863. And much like Major General Gordon Granger riding into Texas all those years ago, it took a long time. And it took a long time for Juneteenth to become a federal holiday. And we've got a wonderful group of guests on the line with us today. And so I want to open this up for all of you. And I think, running through the names here real quick. Britt, I think you actually made the point with regards to George Floyd and his death at the hands of a now former police officer in Minnesota as sort of an awakening to Juneteenth. And Reverend Cobb, you used the phrase awakening. So why did it take so long for Juneteenth to finally become a national holiday?
One of the reasons, the way that I see it, is because there was such a struggle against it. Slavery in itself is a crime that was committed against humanity. And for every crime, there must be or would be a type of a punishment. But if there's no admission of a criminal act for the length of time that it took, and that there was no one that wanted to be accountable, if they could suppress the knowledge that was associated with the day, then it was as though that crime that had been committed would eventually go away. But the statute of limitations on human rights and on the crime of slavery have not been fully paid. And those that knew that there was a blemish in relationship to their families would not vote on it being a holiday because they were concerned that some of those blemishes would surface. And so I think that it was a matter of fear, and that perhaps that we just celebrate the day away and that we would have amnesia and forget the time prior to that or the day after it. Because on the day after that, we woke up, we were free, but we had nothing. And there was, and from that nothing, we've come to this point in our time, educational-wise, economically, and that we're still making breakthroughs on that. And so there was a dragging of the feet in making it a holiday because they knew, even though a lot of people didn't know, there were some that did know, and they wanted it suppressed.
I think that's a really fascinating point about it's the admission of that what was done was wrong, but at the same time the continuing, I guess, to kind of let it continue to be happen, let it continue to be celebrated, but in such small numbers that if you don't acknowledge it, it's not real. And like you had said, Mary, you didn't first learn about it until you went to school down in Houston, Texas. And I'll be honest, I don't think I learned about it until much later on in life as well. Despite growing up in pretty mixed neighborhoods across Chicago and Milwaukee as a child. And, you know, it's one of those things that it almost feels like... It feels like it's following the same pathway as Pride Month, which is ironic because they're both in June, right? And so Pride Month, the same thing, where it was a group of individuals who were held back because of who they were, and whether or not you agreed with them or not. But if you just ignored it and you just swept it under the rug, Pride Month wasn't real. You didn't have to worry about it. Just like Juneteenth wasn't real, and the crimes committed against those formerly enslaved persons, whether they were their physical crimes, whether they were redlining and not allowing black people to go ahead and buy homes post-Civil War, post-World War I, post-World War II, not allowing them to integrate into society. But now, Juneteenth is integrated into society, and we have the clip from President Joe Biden on June 17th of 2021 signing Juneteenth into law.
That's what we must understand, that Juneteenth represents not only the commemoration of the end of slavery in America more than 150 years ago, but the ongoing work that have to bring true equity and racial justice into American society, which we can do. In short, this day doesn't just celebrate the past. It calls for action today. I wish all Americans a happy Juneteenth. I'm certainly going to sign in the law, making it a federal holiday. And I have to say to you, I've only been president for several months. But I think this will go down for me as one of the greatest honors I will have had as president, not because I did it, you did it, Democrats and Republicans, but it's an enormous, enormous honor.
And I think it's an honor that's it's a flag that we all need to carry with us in terms of a flag of celebration as opposed to a flag of burden when it comes to understanding what many of our neighbors and many of our loved ones, our coworkers, and what their what their history is in this country, and really how this country was built. A wonderful project done, the 1618 project done by the New York Times. A lot of work really going into understanding the role of slavery and enslaved persons in this country. And let's talk about really quick. There's a couple of events happening this weekend, and I know Juneteenth coming up on Sunday. Many of you are going to be celebrating. A lot of listeners might be hearing about Juneteenth for the first time and maybe wanting to know what's going on. So I'll open this up for all of you. I know that Britt and Meg over at Purdue University Northwest, you've got a big event coming up, right?
Thank you, Tom. Yes, we absolutely do. And I want to commend my colleague Britt Hudson on her incredible work with our students at Purdue Northwest and with the entire community. So we are looking forward to the event Saturday, June 18th, outside our Student Union and Library building from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And it's going to feature the Thrill Maze roller skate. So there's going to be and laser tag. There's going to be a lot of fun activities for children, for adults. There's going to be live music. So As Ms. Opoli mentioned, the role of Dr. Myers and the role of music and celebration and the freedom aspect of Juneteenth, we're going to be featuring Lauren Duke's band. It's going to be playing and performing from 11 to 2. We're going to have food, crafts, all kind of good stuff. And Britt, I'm probably forgetting other cool aspects of the event.
Yeah, one thing that we are very intentional about focusing on with our Juneteenth celebration, and we were with our Black History Month celebration on campus, is using the focal point of Black-owned businesses. So a lot of the businesses that we'll be working with, as Meg mentioned, our Thriller Maze, Skate Rink, and Laser Tag is a Black-owned vendor from the area. So we're not, we're walking the walk and talking the talk at the same time, but wanting to make sure that we're highlighting Black-owned businesses in our area that are from our area to show the collaboration that we have on campus, but also to get those businesses out there and spotlight those businesses at the same time.
And Reverend Cobb, and I'll throw this out to Mary as well. What are your plans for both at the Gary chapter and the Hammond chapters of the NAACP this weekend?
But in Hammond, that is also Father's Day, and there's going to be a short program in Martin Luther King Jr. Park on that Sunday from 2 to 4. And so the other events that are about, because graduations and otherwise, we'll be moving around to each of the celebration places that you know, that do or already have established it. And we hope to be able to stop at Purdue, that neighborhood. And so we, you know, so there's things that, you know, that we will take part in, but that's the only one that, you know, that we were definitely, you know, do a walkthrough on some of those.
And Mary?
And Gary Branch of the NAACP event will be Saturday, June 18th from 1 to 4. And we will have fun activities, family-oriented activities, Juneteenth-themed activities, a DJ. But we will also deal with a few of the challenges that face our community. We'll be talking about health disparities. We'll be talking about different topics like education and housing. We will have our Congressmember Van will be there. And we're just wanting to also not just celebrate Juneteenth, but also we want to begin to educate and mobilize and engage our community, because that's the only way that our communities will change is if we provide education.
Absolutely. We have just a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to get, and anyone can chime in on this, your thoughts. Lately, there have been a lot of concerns echoed throughout the African-American community about the commercialization of the holiday. The Children's Museum of Indianapolis received backlash because of I believe it was called Juneteenth Watermelon Salad. So just in the couple of minutes that we have left, if any of you can chime in on your thoughts on the actual commercialization of this now national holiday.
D, we lost the end of your comment.
I'm sorry. My question regarding your thoughts on the commercialization of Juneteenth.
Well, for me, and I won't speak for myself. I'll speak more for the NAACP, the Gary Branch. I think that if it's commercialization with education, then it's totally acceptable. I will make a brief comment or just have a statement about the connotation behind the use of watermelon. You know, if you look at it in the African American community, if, you know, there have been times where people said, oh, you like chicken and you like watermelon. Those are negative, can be perceived as negative connotations. So I can't speak in terms of why the Indianapolis Children's Museum got the backlash, but if I had to make a brief assessment, it would be because of the title. If I would critique it, but that's just my opinion, and I'll yield to everybody else.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the commercialization is beneficial to, you know, the plight of Black people and people outside of the Black community, or even in the Black community who didn't know anything about Juneteenth, being educated about, you know, what happened and why we celebrate it. But it does have to come with education. It doesn't just get a brand. Unfortunately, the plight of Black people has not been able to be a brand since 1865. And we have not been able to wear our culture in the sense of it being appreciated as much as it has started to become now. So I think that's kind of where some of that backlash can come from, is very much, you know, we've had plenty of very core incidents with blackface and caricature creating about Black culture and the Black community, where those things go south. So if we are going to continue on this road of celebrating Juneteenth and making it more commercialized, it does have to come with a certain level of education and having people understand how to be tactful in that process, and how to do that properly and give Black people their due.
I would just underline too what Britt and Mary have both been saying so eloquently, that it's really a Juneteenth mission about celebration and education. And I think that's also why, to the extent that it's commercialized, if we put our focus really on Black-owned business, then we can feel like, you know, the beneficiaries, if there is to be an economic beneficiary or commercialization aspect, that it's Black businesses that are the ones that benefit. And I will just underline, too, the notion that it's a continuing education for myself, right, that Juneteenth was something I feel like I became more aware of during the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd. I think it's May 26th, 2020. This book on Juneteenth by historian Annette Gordon Reed at Harvard has been a really neat source for me just to understand a bit more of the history of Texas and the history and spread of Juneteenth. We recognize that the freedom of 3 million people out of a country of 31 million people, that's a pretty momentous historical moment that deserves a holiday. The freedom of 3 million people, that's really astonishing. And it's a work in progress, but it was an important threshold that had to be crossed.
And I just want to add to what Meg is saying, and I think that we have an amazing opportunity right now with the folks that are around the table to do a partnership and to continue the activities and the education, not just on that day, but making sure that we partner to provide education to folks in Northwest Indiana to better understand, and also to begin to, as what Purdue is doing, empowering or highlighting Black-owned businesses. I won't even go onto a soapbox about, you know, redlining and housing, because it is ever present today.
I want to jump in really quick. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you to Mary Cossey, Reverend Homer Clay Cobb, Meg Rickner, as well as Britt Hudson. And, of course, a big thank you to our producer and co-host, Dee Dotson, for making this conversation on Juneteenth possible today here on Regionally Speaking.